Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
We shall read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya Leela, Chapter 8. Ramachandra Puri criticizes the Lord. Within this chapter is the description of the passing away of Srila Madhavendra Puri and how he was served by his disciple Ishwara Puri. But along with that, we will read how Ramachandra Puri also came to his spiritual master, Sri Madhavendra Puri, in his last days. But he committed an offense, and as a result, he became a great fault finder with Vaishnavas. And offenses are very subtle and intricate. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. We will come back to that shortly. So Ramachandra Puri came to Nilachal, Jagannath Puri. And he would invite people to have prasad, and he would induce them to eat too much. And then he would criticize them for overeating. I mean, there are many people that induce us to eat more. But this was motivated with a bad intention to find fault. So, in that context, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami gives the background how Ramachandra Puri became such a critic of Vaishnavas. By relating this important incident. Text 18. Formerly, when Madhavendra Puri was at the last stage of his life, Ramachandra Puri came to where he was staying. Are you following so far? Madhavendra Puri was chanting the holy name of Krishna, and sometimes he would cry, "Oh my Lord, I did not get shelter at Mathura." So, everything that exists in the material world exists originally in the spiritual world. In a pure form. But the same things exist in the material world, but in an inverted form. You know, in the spiritual world, everything is for the pleasure of Krishna. And in the material world, things are reversed, and we want to be the center. We don't want Krishna to be the center, so we want things to be arranged for our pleasure. So, one very central point in loving relationships is the feeling of separation. We experience it in the material world, but separation in the material world brings misery. But separation exists in the spiritual world, and the separation in the spiritual world is actually another manifestation of transcendental ecstasy. And so that in and of itself is a big topic, but it's described very nicely in Shibrihad Bhagavatamrita, the super excellence of love in separation. And in the intensity of love and separation, one experiences meeting. It's only superficially separation. And one example is dry ice, or anything that's very cold. It burns. It's like when it's like so cold, it burns. So in the same way, separation, when it becomes very intense, it creates the opposite effect, which is meeting. You actually meet in separation. So Madhavendra Puri was in the mood of separation from Krishna. And he was lamenting, this is also Vaishnava humility, he was lamenting that he could not attain Krishna, he could not attain the land of Krishna, Mathura. Madhavendra Puri was chanting the holy name of Krishna, and sometimes he would cry, "Oh my Lord, I did not get shelter at Mathura." Then Ramachandra Puri was so foolish that he fearlessly dared to instruct his spiritual master. Quote, "If you are in full transcendental bliss," he said, "you should now remember only Brahman. Why are you crying?" So, well, purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma-bhuta prasanatma, a Brahman-realized person is always happy. Nasochati nakankshati, he neither laments nor aspires for anything. Not knowing why Madhavendra Puri was crying, Ramachandra Puri tried to become his advisor. Thus he committed a great offense. For a disciple should never try to instruct his spiritual master. So, what the Bhagavad Gita says is true, that someone on the spiritual platform neither laments nor hankers. But that refers to material hankering and lamentation. But there's also spiritual hankering and lamentation, which exists on the liberated platform. And so Madhavendra Puri, he was exhibiting spiritual lamentation. I could not achieve Krishna, or spiritual hankering, that I want to achieve Krishna. But his disciple, Ramachandra Puri, he couldn't understand that. He was on a low platform. And he had a mean mentality. 22. Hearing this instruction, Madhavendra Puri, greatly angry, rebuked him by saying, "Get out, you sinful rascal." Purport. Ramachandra Puri could not understand that his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri, was feeling transcendental separation. his lamentation was not material. Rather, it proceeded from the highest stage of ecstatic love of Krishna. He was crying in separation. I could not achieve Krishna. I could not reach Mathura. This was not ordinary material lamentation. Ramachandra Puri was not sufficiently expert to understand the feelings of Madhavendra Puri, but nevertheless he thought himself very advanced. Therefore, regarding Madhavendra Puri's expressions as ordinary material lamentation, he advised him to remember Brahman, because he was latently an impersonalist. Madhavendra Puri understood Ramachandra Puri's position as a great fool, and therefore immediately rebuked him. Such a reprimand from the spiritual master is certainly for the betterment of the disciple. So this phrase, Krodha Upajila, anger arose. Now here's the same thing. The Bhagavad Gita says that, you know, lust, greed, and anger are like gateways to hell. You know, anger is something a devotee should avoid or control. But this anger in Madhavendra Puri was spiritual. Just as one, in the material world, one will have a material desire, and if that desire is frustrated, he'll become angry. In fact, a Sanskrit word for anger is kamanuja. Anuja means to follow, like Ramanuja. So a word for anger is kamanuja, because when there's lust, anger follows. So, but this anger in Madhavendra Puri was transcendental. We experience material anger when a material desire is frustrated. But a pure devotee desires only Krishna's pleasure. And if there's an impediment to Krishna's pleasure, he may become angry, not out of personal frustration, but to remove the obstacle to Krishna's pleasure. So Ramachandra Puri was a latent impersonalist. He was not acting in a way that was favorable to Krishna's pleasure. And so Madhavendra Puri, his spiritual master, became angry and rebuked him and said, "Get out, you sinful rascal." And Madhavendra Puri continues, "O my Lord Krishna, I could not reach you, nor could I reach your abode, Mathura. I am dying in my unhappiness, and now this rascal has come to give me more pain." And he speaks to Ramachandra Puri, "Don't show your face to me. Go anywhere else you like. If I die seeing your face, I shall not achieve the destination of my life. I am dying without achieving the shelter of Krishna, and therefore I am greatly unhappy. Now this condemned foolish rascal has come to instruct me about Brahman." So this sounds, it's transcendental anger. It's transcendental anger, and as Srila Prabhupada said in the purport, such a reprimand from the spiritual master is certainly for the betterment of the disciple. But this statement, "Don't show your face to me," actually reminds me of something that Srila Prabhupada said to one of his disciples. who left him and then came back to explain why he left. So the disciple had been Srila Prabhupada's personal servant, one of his personal servants. And that can also be dangerous because Hare Krishna Parampara you're being blessed by the Parampara. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yeyatam mam prapadyante, as one comes to chaiva bhajamyam, if one surrenders to me, I reciprocate accordingly. So great souls who are representatives of Krishna also reciprocate. So this disciple came to Srila Prabhupada and said that the reason he left was he was never really happy in Krishna consciousness. And, you know, in effect, he was saying that he didn't like Krishna consciousness, and which includes like not liking Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada replied, good, I'm glad you left, because now I don't have to see your morose face all the time. So, of course, ultimately Srila Prabhupada was not glad that he left the Association of Devotees, but in the former servant's mood, like, yeah, I wasn't happy with you, Prabhupada said, well, good, I'm glad you left, because we weren't happy with you either. But that's on one level, but underlying, of course, Srila Prabhupada or any pure devotee would want every soul to become Krishna conscious. Now, we come to a very important point, text 26. Ramachandra Puri was thus denounced by Madhavendra Puri. Due to his offense, gradually material desire appeared within him. Purport. The word vasana, material desires, also refers to dry speculative knowledge. Such speculative knowledge is only material. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4, a person without devotional service who simply wants to know things, kevala bodha labdhyate, gains only dry speculative knowledge but no spiritual profit. This is confirmed in the Bhakti Sandarbha 1.11, wherein it is said, Jivan mukti api purnar yanti samsara vasanam yad yachinta mahashakto bhagavat aparadina. Even though one is liberated in this life, if one offends the Supreme Personality of Godhead and falls down in the midst of material desires, of which dry speculation about spiritual realization is one. In his Lagutoshani commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32, Jiva Goswami says, Jivan mukta api purnar bandhanam yanti kormabi yad yachintya mahashakto bhagavata paradinaha. Even if one is liberated in this life, he becomes addicted to material desires because of offenses to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A similar quotation from one of the Puranas also appears in the Vishnu Bhakti Chandrodaya. Jivan mukta prapadyante kvachit samsaravasanam yogino na vilipyante karma bir bhagavat para. Even liberated souls sometimes fall down to material desires. But those who fully engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are not affected by such desires. These are references from authoritative revealed scriptures. If one becomes an offender to a spiritual master of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he falls down to the material platform to merely speculate. So this is a very important point. It indicates the downward spiral that one can enter if one commits offenses. Srila Jiva Goswami has discussed the effects of offenses in the Sandarbhas. And one effect is that one becomes inclined to the association of offenders. One becomes inclined to associate with people who criticize devotees. Have you ever observed this phenomenon? It's very, very dangerous. It's very dangerous. So we want to, at any cost, avoid criticizing Vaishnavas. And we want to associate with devotees who are averse to such criticism. We should really avoid it at any cost. Because even if someone's liberated, they can fall down if they commit offenses. So how careful we should be. Text 27. One who is attached to dry speculative knowledge has no relationship with Krishna. His occupation is criticizing Vaishnavas. Thus he is situated in criticism. So that's the one example. Ramachandrapuri, the negative example. Now we come to the positive example. Ishwarapuri, the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, performed service to Madhavendra Puri, cleaning up his stool and urine with his own hand. Ishwarapuri was always chanting the holy name and pastimes of Lord Krishna for Madhavendra Puri to hear. In this way, he helped Madhavendra Puri remember the holy name and pastimes of Lord Krishna at the time of death. Pleased with Ishwarapuri, Madhavendra Puri embraced him and gave him the benediction that he would become a great devotee and lover of Krishna. So, this is an example for us in caring for any devotee. Ishwarapuri cleaned up the stool and urine of his spiritual master with his own hand. In other words, he served him in terms of his bodily needs without any reservation or false prestige. And he also chanted the holy names and pastimes of Krishna to help Srila Madhavendra Puri remember them. And he specifically chanted those pastimes that were in the mood of Madhavendra Puri's Krishna consciousness. And as a result, Prema Dana, Madhavendra Puri blessed Ishwarapuri with the Prema Dana, the treasure of pure love for Krishna. So much so that that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, accepted Ishwara Puri as his spiritual master. Thus, Ishwara Puri became like an ocean of ecstatic love for Krishna, whereas Ramachandra Puri became a dry speculator and a critic of everyone else. Ishwara Puri received the blessings of Madhavendra Puri, whereas Ramachandra Puri received a rebuke from him. Therefore, these two persons, Ishwara Puri and Ramachandra Puri, are examples of the objects of a great personality's benediction and punishment. Madhavendra Puri instructed the entire world by presenting these two examples. So I will now relate an incident from my own experience in caring for my biological father. He was diagnosed with cancer and was in a hospital. And my father had only two children, me and my sister. And my sister had a small son at that time, 4.5 years old. And she was also looking after my mother. So, but we felt that someone should always be in the hospital room with my father, and so because, you know, she was otherwise engaged, I was the obvious choice. So the hospital room was such that, it was in a hospital bed that was alongside the window. And then there was a sofa along the other wall where I would lie down. And then, like up, just a little past and opposite the sofa was the bathroom. So my father's illness was such that he would need help whenever he needed to go to the toilet. And so I was in a constant state of vigilance because I thought at any moment he might need help. So I was quite exhausted, of course, emotionally, the whole ordeal was exhausting, and even physically I was exhausted because I would be awake during the day, but even when I lay down at night, I couldn't sleep because I was in this state of vigilance. Any sound, I thought it might be my father needing help, and quite often it was. I was exhausted. So, but when he needed help, I would you know, I'd rush to the bedside and help him out of bed and accompany him to the bathroom. But sometimes he didn't make it in time, so I would clean up. And then, you know, after spending the whole night like that, in the early morning, the sun was just coming in through the window, I don't know if he called me to his bedside or I was there because he was helping him get back in bed, but he suddenly said, what would you do if I gave you $1 million? Now, that was not in my mind at all. I mean, it was the furthest thing from my mind then. And I didn't know what to say. But I said something, you know, general. But really, I was just doing it as a matter of duty. And he was my father, and it was affection, and I didn't want him to suffer any more than necessary. So at that time, we'll leave that for now. So eventually, my father lived for some months more, and then it just so happened that His Holiness Radhanath Swami was in Chicago visiting his father. And it was arranged that he was going to come and visit me on Monday. So on the Sunday before he was going to come up and visit me, one of the nurses at a hospice, we had a rotation of nurses, so she came in and said, your father is calling for you. He's about to leave. And that calling, and that stage, his calling was by the eyes. I mean, he wasn't speaking at that. It was at the very end. So, I don't know if I was speaking with Radhanath Swami then, or I quickly phoned him and I said, you know, my father's leaving. And, you know, it won't work for you to come tomorrow. So I'll phone you and we'll work out a time. And then my father left. And it was a very striking departure. Everyone in the family was there, and my father had a brother who had passed away earlier, older brother, and that older brother had two sons, my cousins. So those two cousins and their wives came out. This was in Chicago. They came out from California. And they were there. And the nurse, was quite a spiritual lady, was there. And, I think my sister was on one side holding my father's hand. I was on the other side holding his hand. And then just as he was leaving, like his eyes opened very wide, and this big smile came across his face. And then he left, and his face was left in that expression. And my sister is sort of a, you know, rational, sort of skeptical type. But it was so vivid what she saw. We were all anticipating that when he left, you know, there'd be like terrible lamentation, but there wasn't. It was like everyone was just frozen, like transfixed by this scene. And she just blurted out, I wonder what he saw that made him, you know, open his eyes like that and smile like that. So, but then my mother, yeah, definitely she burst into tears and I went out of the room with her. That was like amazing. So a few days later, Radhanath Swami did come out, and he spent several hours together. And I told him, among other things, I told him the story of my staying up all night with my father and, you know, helping him to the bathroom and cleaning up the mess, and then how at the end of it all he said, you know, what would you do if I gave you $1 million? And he said, you know, this is just like Madhavendra Puri and Ishwara Puri. Because Ishwara Puri, you know, dedicated himself fully to the service of his spiritual master, even, you know, cleaning up his stool and urine with his own hand. And in reciprocation, Madhavendra Puri blessed him, you know, with love of God, Prema Dana, pure love of Godhead, which was the great treasure he possessed. And so, like in the same mood, your father, you know, benedicted you with the treasure he possessed, which was his material, but that was what he possessed. But he was in that mood to, like, give it. So, and I had actually had that same thought when it happened, but I didn't say that to Radhanath Swami, but when I told him the story, he also had the same thought and, you know, expressed it very eloquently. So this is actually a very, I mean, helping someone at the time of death is a really special opportunity to do service, you know, selfless service. And, you know, get the blessings. And especially with devotees, I mean, they all get special blessings because they're dear to Krishna. But even relatives who aren't devotees, they're also special because they have a connection with devotees. And my mother's departure also is very auspicious. I won't describe it in detail for lack of time, but it is sort of timely in that. So she was, at this time she was in Santa Barbara, California, because after my father left, we felt that she should stay with one of the children. And I was in Juhu, Bombay. Didn't seem like a very, plus a sannyasi, so it didn't seem like a very feasible alternative. So my mother went to stay with my sister in Santa Barbara. And on the night, so I really wanted to get through, because anyway, there are signs that it was like pretty clear that she was going to be leaving very soon. And I wanted to get through to His Holiness Radhanath Swami, who was in New York for the New York Rath Yatra. But, you know, I couldn't get through to him, but I left a message and hoped, you know, that the message would get through. And quite remarkably, it did get through. And so he, as I found out, he went into the temple room to lead kirtan. And at that time, he announced to all the devotees, you know, like, huge number of devotees who came for Rath Yatra. The whole temple room was packed. And, you know, he announced that, you know, your Swami's devoted mother is about to leave her body. So this kirtan is dedicated to her, and you know, you should infuse this kirtan with your prayers for her. And as I later found out, like while that kirtan was going on, you know, like 20 minutes after he made that announcement, she left. And from the Santa Barbara side, it was also, you know, almost all the family was there. The rabbi, not the rabbi, the cantor from the Jewish temple had come and sang. So it was, from that side, it was nice too. But that, I thought that was like really special. And so, yeah, when my father left, one devotee sent me a quote which is like so like profound and encouraging. A quote from Srila Prabhupada that the parents of my disciples will realize their good fortune at the time of their passing away. And I, you know, I thought that was like really true of my parents. And realize has two meanings. Realize means like understand, like I didn't realize how valuable Krishna consciousness was, but now I understand. And realize also means that something becomes a reality. Like, you know, he realized his dream of seeing the Institute House at Gita Nagari when he went for the retreat last year. So realize can also mean, and both of those meanings fit perfectly. You know, the parents of my disciples would realize their good fortune, realize their good fortune at the time of their passing away. So, yeah, it's very interesting because the rabbi at the Jewish temple in Santa Barbara, we sort of became friends, and he had just come there, and he was saying he felt sort of drained by. I guess he'd come from a different place, and I guess he thought they were more, you know, more spiritual or less mundane, or I don't know. I don't want to commit any offenses here or attribute any to him, because his mood was not offensive, but he did feel it to be a bit of a strain and a drain. So I asked him, well, what sort of nourishes you, you know, in the present context? You know, what inspires you? And he said, this might come as a surprise to you, but when I minister to dying congregants, it puts me in a very sacred space, and I actually find that very spiritually uplifting. And that's really true. So it's, I mean, this subject is of like death and dying is something people don't like to talk about. They don't even like to think about it. But you know, and even research has shown that when people talk about it, they feel more relaxed about it. And when they don't talk about it, they're more anxious. And also, if they really have a terminal prognosis and they don't fight it, but they accept it and just live their remaining days, you know, with that acceptance and you know, with whatever spirituality they can, they actually end up you know, according to the statistics, living longer than the people who are fighting it, which could seem paradoxical, but we know why, you know, they live longer, because they're not wasting their time and energy fighting a losing battle that's just going to exhaust them and could end up, filling them with drugs and chemicals and things that are really not good for them, ultimately. So, and of course, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami's departure itself was exemplary. It's like a book, like a chapter out of the Vedas, and how the devotees took care of him, especially His Holiness Radhana Swami. That's like really amazing, really, really exemplary. So, yeah, as I believe he said, we are blessed by the best, and we are. And we should, take full advantage of that blessing, and also share those blessings to the best of our capacity, and I guess let go of everything else. I mean, that is really it's one of the offenses in the chanting of the Holy Name, to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions in the matter. And that's a bad one. And it is offensive to Krishna, to the Holy Name, because, you know, we're chanting. I mean, externally we're chanting, but internally we're like holding on to something. A sort of a hypocrisy. And, and we can't hold on to it anyway, so. Once I asked Ravindra Sarup Prabhu about this offense, like it's translated in the Nectar of Devotion, to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions in the matter. To not have complete faith in the chanting of the Holy Name and to maintain material attachments. So I asked Ravindra Sarup Prabhu, what's the connection? And he said, the connection is that the reason you hold on to material attachments is you don't have complete faith in the Holy Name. You don't have faith that the Holy Name will give you whatever you need. So you think, I don't really know if, you know, say, on a certain level, my need or desire to love and be loved will be satisfied by Krishna. So, like, I hold on to some attachment, or even more materially, like, and I don't really know if Krishna will take care of me, so I have to, like, keep working hard and keep accumulating more money and keep, you know, banking it or investing it at the cost of my spiritual life, because I don't have complete faith. So, I mean, yeah, we do take precautions. It's not like, you know, we're just like, but we should realize that what will really stay with us is our relationship with Krishna and his associates. And not invest too much in things that we're going to have to leave behind at the cost of of what's really permanent. And another thing is not to wait till it's, not to wait, because that's also a sort of my, that, well, now I'll, work hard, I'll earn, and I'll set aside money for the future, and then, when I'm older, I'll take to Krishna consciousness. And that's, recently we celebrated the Shringa Chaturdasi, and when Prahlad was instructing his classmates, he also had to contend with that argument. Well, we're just children, let us play now. We'll take to Krishna consciousness when we're older. And he said, well, say you live 100 years, so maybe average every day between sleeping, eating, bathing, and taking care of your body, maybe like 12 hours out of 24. So 100 years, you're already down to 50. And then the first 10 years, you're just a child, you're too frivolous. And then you get married and you have to earn and maintain your family. And that goes on another, say, 20 years. And then you're too old and infirm, and you might be losing your faculties. So when you subtract everything like that, there's hardly any time left, practically no time at all. And there used to be a sort of, sort of materialistic saying that, the one who has the most toys at the end of the day or at the end of their life wins. In other words, the one who accumulates the most wins. That's like that material idea. But now some somewhat prolonged lives and all the different types of dementia and Alzheimer's and so on, people are afraid of, a lot of people are more afraid of that happening to them than actually dying. So one commentator said that the saying used to be, he who has the most toys at the end wins. But now people are thinking, he who has the most marbles at the end. So, we shouldn't waste time. I guess that's what I'm saying. We shouldn't waste time at all. So, I do feel I'm in the midst of many, wise and saintly persons and realized souls, so I would be happy to hear any reflections from any of you, comments or questions. Yes.
It seems like it's a fine line between being giving up material desires. We chant so that we can become purified, but then you were saying, and the injunction is we have to not
maintain material attachments.
Isn't that what we chant? So that loosens its grip on us?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, we chant to increase our attachment to Krishna, and then naturally we will decrease our attachment to material things. you know, independent of Krishna. So that's why it's an offense to hold on to those attachments. It's like the contrary to what the purpose of the chanting is meant to be. That,
well, it's not that we stop chanting, but those attachments are still there.
Yeah.
So we just keep chanting.
I think this is something I heard recently in Dallas, that one disciple approached Tamal Krishna Goswami and said, you know, like, I'm doing so much service and everything, but I feel I'm not advancing much or as quickly as I would like to. So what should I do? So Tamal Krishna Goswami replied, well, there's two ideas. One is, if you serve Krishna, the Guru will be pleased. And the other is, if you serve the Guru, Krishna will be pleased. But if you serve the Vaishnavas, both the Guru and Krishna will be pleased. So that's... it's very, very important. Very, very important. Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. That by rendering service to the book Bhagavat, means by hearing, chanting and hearing, or by rendering service to the person Bhagavat, all that's inauspicious in the heart becomes destroyed almost to nil. Once His Holiness Keshava Bharati Das Goswami was staying with me in Santa Barbara. And at that time, a disciple of Tamal Krishna Goswami named Kirtida Dasi left her body in Dallas. And it seemed, from all accounts, she had reached a very high state of Krishna consciousness before she left. So I asked him what he thought was like the common thread in, you know, devotees who we knew who reached very high stages of Krishna consciousness before leaving their body. And he immediately said, selfless service. Selfless service. It means two things. It means you serve without thinking of yourself. It means you don't hold anything back because you're thinking of yourself. And you don't serve to get something for yourself. So, I mean, it's all very complementary. It's meant to be complementary, that by serving devotees, we get more taste for chanting. We chant, we're praying for service. So if we chant nicely, we get to do more service. And preaching also. Sharing with others, it's complementary. By, you know, preaching, that purifies the heart, so we have more taste for chanting and hearing. And then chanting and hearing, we feel bliss, and then we want to share that with others, so we preach. When Vaisheshika Prabhu was, this was some years back when he was working on his book, which recently came out. So he was telling me about different themes that he wanted to incorporate, and one of the themes was that the devotee should have, you know, like very strong sadhana, especially morning program, and then and their book distribution or their outreach should be a manifestation of their ecstasy from their spiritual practices. So that's the ideal. But even duty also comes. So even if you do things as a matter of duty, that also will help. I don't know if I really answered your question or not. Yeah. Like one year His Holiness Niranjan Swami came to Vrindavan during Kartik, and I think where he was located physically at Govardhan at the Bhaktivedanta Ashram, I think the room he was in was such that everyone who came into the ashram would come to his door. And he was, in a way, like so harassed by all the pilgrims, you know, walking in the door and coming to see him. He decided, well, you know, I'm not really getting the benefit of Kartik and Vrindavan, so I might as well go to Mumbai and preach, and, you know, serve. At that time, he wanted to help some devotees in Mumbai. So sometimes we adjust, you know, according to what. So he had the intention of like chanting and hearing at Govardhan, but it wasn't working out. So okay, then I'll serve the Vaishnavas. And yeah, one or the other, or both. Hare Krishna. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
With all that we have, written practice is with, and we know that we're supposed to chant and we still have this fear when it's time to die, you know, we serve selflessly and serve the devotees, serve God in our lives, serve Krishna. Well, it will be easier for us, but we still have a fear.
As we become more attached to Krishna, we'll become more detached from, you know, material things. And so, at the time of death, we shouldn't have so much difficulty leaving those things behind. Another thing about death, I mean, there's different kinds of deaths, different circumstances, but the pain can also help you become detached. Like in my father's case, it was a little indirect, but it was very vivid. You know, for quite a while, you know, almost from the beginning, you know, I wanted him to stay. I was like praying that he could recover and stay longer. And although he was very limited in what he could do, but it wasn't actually suffering that much pain. When he got out of the hospital, that was our goal, to get him out of the hospital and bring him home. And he wasn't suffering that much. So, you know, I was praying that he could stay longer. He'd even maybe get better, somewhat better at least. But then things took a change, and he really started to suffer. And when that happened, I couldn't pray for him to stay because I didn't want him to suffer. And I don't know if I should say this, but and everyone says there's no secrets in Krishna consciousness. But so that day I went to the Chicago Temple. And it's like the deities of Gaur Nitai were, it's like they were alive, you know, like they were just there, Gaur Nitai. And, you know, in spite of all my other prayers until then, when I saw how much he was suffering and would suffer, then I was ready, you know. So I sort of prayed, you know, that I don't want him to suffer, you know, to do with him what you like. And then when I got home that evening, he'd taken a real, externally, like a real nosedive in terms of his health. And then it was, not, you know, maybe just a few more days. So I think, I mean, no one, I think by definition, no one likes pain. No one likes to suffer. And so seeing a loved one suffer can create a sense of detachment in us that, okay, let them go because they're suffering. We don't want to see them suffer. And it could happen with us. You know, okay, I want to stay in this world and enjoy all these things, but then it becomes so painful, then I'd let it be. But, you know, I'm ready to let go of it all because... So, I mean, Krishna is very considerate of his devotees. And in you know, attending to devotees who've left and even more so maybe hearing stories about their departures, can really see how Krishna helps. It's amazing. And if they're not ready, you know, Krishna can help them to get ready. Like Mother Kirtita, who left her body in Dallas, was like so exalted. But she almost died two years before she actually did. And at that time she was in England, and devotees said that actually she wasn't ready then. She still had some issues that she had to work out. So, you know, it's sort of like Krishna gave her that test, and it sort of made it clear what her issues were. And then he let her live longer. And then by the time she actually did leave 2 years later in Dallas, she had, you know, come to terms with whatever it was. And she was completely ready. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
How to perform material duties without material attachment?
Her question is how to do material duties without material attachment. That's a good question. I mean, in bhakti, the definition of bhakti, pure devotional service, is that it should be continuous. And it should be for Krishna's pleasure. So we really, shouldn't do anything not for Krishna's pleasure. And so in this, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, in his commentary on that verse, this main verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anyavilasita Svanya, he says that if someone is fully engaged in devotional service, he doesn't have to do something like perform the last rites for his father. If he thinks that, oh, my devotional service will depend on my doing, you know, my material duties, then that's against pure devotional service. Jnana Karmadi Anavratam. It covers the independent nature of bhakti. Bhakti doesn't need anything else to be successful. But he says that a devotee might think, if I don't, you know, if I don't perform the last rites, people will criticize that, oh, he's a devotee, didn't even do the last rites for his father. So considering their spiritual welfare, that it won't be good for them if they criticize the devotee, or on the other hand, if he goes and they get a good impression of Krishna consciousness, then that's good for them spiritually. So whatever we do, we should have in mind to connect it with Krishna and to do it in such a way that Krishna's pleased. And in that way, it's not really material. We can say material in the sense that it's related to material obligations, but it's ultimately for Krishna's pleasure. I mean, if that's our mood, that it's ultimately for Krishna's pleasure, then it's not material, and it shouldn't encumber us with more material attachment. There was one incident in Juhu. One year Srila Prabhupada came, as usual, and I was, you know, so he came up to his quarters at the back of the property, and I looked out the window and I saw like a new brahmachari, like nice orange robes, and I'd never seen him before. Usually the people that travel with Prabhupada I have seen. So I said, I asked one of the devotees, who's that? No, that's Ambarish Das. That's Alfred Ford's great-grandson. He's just serving like a very humble brahmachari, carrying suitcases. So he stayed for about 2 weeks. We went out preaching different things. But at the end, before leaving, he met with Srila Prabhupada to discuss his future. And Srila Prabhupada told him that he should go back to Detroit and work. And Srila Prabhupada said he wanted people to because in those days, when you became a devotee, it basically meant you just moved into the temple. You left everything and moved into the temple. Even the householders were like that. It was just... So Prabhupada said that, and I want people to understand that you can be a devotee in Krishna consciousness, but still have a responsible position in society. And then he asked, do I have to work in the Ford Motor Corporation? And Prabhupada said, no, you know, some work. Maybe with Ford Motors or not, but some were. And then he came to this point, well, if I'm doing that, if I'm working, what will I do for association? And Srila Prabhupada replied, while you're working, if you're thinking, I'm doing this for Krishna, that will be your association. That's really, of course, we can't be duplicitous, like, I'm doing it for Krishna, but we're not really. But if we are, then like that's your associate, that spiritualizes the activity. And then, you know, if you get money from it, then you should also use the money. Well, anyone who's been in the association of devotees long enough, pretty much everyone, would have had some traumatic experiences. and some devotees, you know, like you said, they take shelter more, or they might readjust things. They might readjust things so that they don't, you know, they're not exposed to that risk, if you will, that danger, but they do still have association with devotees. They do engage in service, and they do progress spiritually. Well, the hope is you have their example to be careful. I'll give, like, there was one incident, it's related in Srimad Bhagavatam, when Lord Brahma was chasing his daughter in a lusty mood. So one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada about it, and he said, you shouldn't think that, you know, Lord Brahma chased after his daughter, I'll also chase after my daughter. But you should think, oh, even such a great soul as Lord Brahma did that, how much more careful I have to be. So, there's no, if you're careful and humble, and the two go together, then you can do it. You'll always be protected. It's more when you get proud and you think you're okay, you know, you're infallible or you're invincible, then there's trouble. In Pakistan, we were printing Srila Prabhupada's books in the local language, so we were at the press. We weren't even sure if they would print the books there, but they found a press, they were willing to print the books. And there was like an apprentice serving the master, and he would do everything, like he'd bring a chair for the master to sit on, or bring him water, like really serve him like a menial servant. And so the devotee I was with, named Sarvabhauma from Pakistan, who said, you know, he'll go far because he's serving the teacher. And the teacher, he had lost 2/3 of his finger in the press. And it was like he knew what to do and what not to do, but he became overconfident, and so he became careless. as he or God. So it's like that verse that, you know, it's like a razor's edge. You have to be very careful, not careful not to be bloodshed. But if you're careful, and careful really means to be, you know, under the shelter of Krishna and his devotees. And you can make it. Even if people bigger than you have had difficulty. And we also don't know what they're going through. We also shouldn't judge them, because we also don't know what they're going through, how Krishna's dealing with them, so we can't just like write them off either, because they didn't, you know. But our instruction should be that we should just be very careful and not deviate, not take chances, and not be overcome. They shouldn't be too timid either. That's a bit of a paradox. So. But if we have that protection, we can be bold. But not bold to play with Maya, but bold to serve Krishna. So I think we should end, not end, but have a break for prasad. Yeah. Have a break for prasad. So what's the arrangement? Is prasad being served now, or what?
So can I just interject one moment? First, we should thank your Shanaras, Holiness, for coming and giving us a wonderful association.
Thank you all.